This episode is sponsored by Masterworks.io, where you're invited to join an exclusive community investing in blue chip art. Visit Masterworks.io and use promo code TDI. And The Disciplined Investor is underwritten by Interactive Brokers. Take the bond challenge by using the free Interactive Brokers bond search tool to search their deep availability of bonds and to compare available yields against those of your broker. Learn why Benzinga just named Interactive Brokers the best bond broker for bonds in 2021 at ibkr.com/bonds.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company. From seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Massive money flows into equity funds, but volume this week, the lowest days of the year. And we're talking about financial goals and milestones. All this and much more on episode number 709 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. How's your April doing? Yeah, time to get outside. For those of you who are definitely cooped up, held up by not over the quarantine, the pandemic, but because of the cold, it's got time to get out there and do some barbecuing, walking, breathing in some fresh air, doing some exercise. You know, we all got to drop that, what are they calling it? The quarantini 15-y. I know. Easier said than done for all of us, but especially for me in a way, because I have been on a smoked meat journey over the last 4 or 5 months now. Talk about that a little bit. I'm Andrew Horowitz. I'm the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I'm a certified financial planner. I'm founder of Horowitz & Company. I'm an investment advisory firm, management of your investments, your financial security, and we've been doing this for over 3 decades, so definitely have some insight into what's going on with the markets and a pretty good understanding of all the different components that go into making sure that our clients reach whatever particular goal they have in the future. We're going to talk about some of that. A lot to go over today. Some things that are, I think, of interest to many of you because there's been things on your mind. You know, what am I going to do for my future? How am I going to get there? So much uncertainty. What about the deficit, the debt? What about the potential for market volatility? All these things that you're thinking about. Well, I'm going to unburden you a bit today. Before we do so, I want to mention, because a lot of you like to follow around my cooking ventures. And what I did, I cooked some dinner for some friends last night. I think I still smell like smoke. I couldn't resist. I found these amazing marbling on short ribs. I was actually at Whole Foods. I was buying a bunch of things for a dinner. Wasn't planning on making any smoked foods. I was getting some sushi-grade tuna, some salmon. I was buying a few ingredients. I need some pink peppercorns. I ran out, so I had to refill. Of course, you got to have pink peppercorns, right? You got to have the black, white, and pink just in case. You don't know what you're going to need them for. But I saw these short ribs, and I said, you know what? I am going to smoke those up for dinner as an appetizer. It was as tender as butter. It was unbelievable. Cooking them for 7 hours. The trick, by the way, for anybody that has asked, because a lot of people ask me this, you know, what's the trick about getting tender meat, especially for cuts that are oftentimes not that tender? It's the slow cooking method. So I put them on for 2 hours in the smoker, let them cook there for about, Started at about 185 degrees, pushed it to about 225. At the end of about two and a half hours, closer to probably the three-hour mark, they were nice and dark. They had that outside layer that we like to call a bark. After you put on your salt, your garlic, whatever you're putting on as a base and putting it in the smoker, you get this bark. Then I took them because I knew I had to fast cook these. I wasn't going to have 15 hours to cook these. I put them very simply in aluminum foil, very tight, rolled them up in a few different pieces, put them back on the smoker for another 4.5 hours. So a total of about 7 hours. And when I opened those up, not only was the smell amazing, the tenderness of this, they were just north of fall apart. They weren't mush, so they had a little bit of consistency to them. But the other thing that's really important is when you put them in aluminum foil, and let me back up. What I usually do is I put them in butcher paper. Now, butcher paper holds in a lot of the juices, but it lets some of them out and evaporate, so you get a bit of a drying factor. The reason I put these in the aluminum foil was it was kind of like a Dutch oven, kind of like a crock pot in a way, the way that I cook these because I need to get them done fast, but it also held in 100% of, well, 98% of the juices. And it really allowed them to cook almost at a boil. That was the way to do it. So it was really good. Anyway, check it out. I'm really digging Whole Foods lately, especially for the meats and their fish. Got some great black cod that I did some smoked with a little bit of honey on them. You can find some great bargains there if you can find out where to shop. I went to the butcher, and I got to tell you, the meats there were more expensive than Whole Foods. I don't know about the quality. I can only tell you about this one particular cut that I bought the other day and a few that I've gotten in the past. I'm pretty impressed with that. I don't think for the everyday items I'm going to shop there because, you know, you go to this store and I go to the Whole Foods and I say, okay, I need dill. You get four sprigs of dill for $4. You go over to the other store, I get a whole entire bunch of dill for $1.25. Anyway. But a lot of you have also contacted me to follow me on my excursion down the lane of smoking or cooking, what I do, which is a pretty significant hobby of mine, if you know me well enough. I'll let you know right now, if you haven't done so, you can follow all my exploits in the eating, drinking, food-related cooking, all that on my Instagram account. And wait for this, the Instagram account. The name is Dad Bod Food Blog. Dad Bod, kind of, you know, if you've seen me, you know what I'm talking about. Dad Bod Food Blog. That's my Instagram account. If you message me that you're a listener, I'll follow you back and we can kind of see what each other's doing. Speaking of Twitter, and then we're going to kind of get into some of the show, I want to talk about Twitter imposters for a second. There are a lot of imposters out there. Only follow the real names. And that is Andrew Horowitz. No spaces, no underscores, nothing at the end, nothing at the beginning. My name, Andrew Horowitz, ending with a Z. That's it. If anyone follows you on Twitter, supposedly being me, looking like me, having the same threads and tweets as me, and DMs you, trying to get you to buy into some kind of cockamamie cryptocurrency scheme of some sort, don't do it. Report them immediately. Immediately. I think we need to do a quick recap of the markets for the week because generally it was an up week. Man, look, did you see what happened on Friday? Like everybody said, well, this is the last time we're going to be able to ever buy stocks again. Let's get in the last half hour of the day. And this was in the face of some concerns about inflationary conditions. So what do we know? We know that the economy is doing well. We could see that in a variety of different economic indicators. We saw from a statistics standpoint, the ISM services, that hit a record recently. The ISM manufacturing is ramping. Overall numbers on the jobs market and labor conditions are improving pretty rapidly, I would say. And at the same time, with all that, there's no sight at all. I mean, there's no inclination that anybody can believe that the Fed is about to pull back in any way meaningfully. In fact, they keep on talking about this time and time again about how, you know, they're going to hold this interest rate to 2023. And then I've been thinking about anything other than that. They're going to keep funding the bond markets with $120 billion per month, split between municipals and others and corporates and whatever they're doing with treasuries. I think it's $80 billion for treasuries, $40 billion for everything else. And you know what? This inflation thing that's out there that people are talking about, hey, you know what? Don't worry about it. It's transitory. That's what they're trying to bring to everybody to believe right now. Well, the PPI, the producer price index, which is the first component of inflationary conditions. What that is basically inflation or prices at the wholesale level. Those are the prices that are being paid to manufacture goods. And the question always is, well, how does that fit into inflation? Well, you have a manufacturer that is getting goods, and then they're manufacturing something, a widget. And then the prices that they pay and the prices that they have to make this are then passed on to the next level, which is retail. And then will that then turn into CPI, consumer-based inflation, right? Consumer price index, which then will become inflationary in the system. Or are they unable to pass that along, and then they have to just absorb that? So sometimes the PPI, which is on the wholesale level, is partially absorbed, and profitability of companies then is in question. Margins shrink a bit. On the other hand, when they can and willingly do pass that along, and it ends up in higher prices in the system, what that does then is to create baseline inflation. Well, there was a pretty substantial increase on a month-over-month basis. As a matter of fact, while we talked about the base effect, which we'll get to in a second, we weren't really expecting that much of an increase on the PPI on a month-over-month basis. Markets, for a moment, when the number came out, which was 1% on the headline number, said, oh, wait, whoa. Oh, by the way, it's kind of funny. The BLS, which puts out the information, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, puts out the information on PPI. Somehow they were supposed to put it out 8:30 in the morning on Friday. It didn't come out to about 8:50 in the morning. There was a glitch in their system. Some have joked around, including myself, that, well, they didn't like the numbers and they need to tweak them a little bit. Would I put it past them? Not really. But again, it's the only numbers that we can go on right now because it is the quote-unquote official numbers that are presented to us. We know that there is inflation. We don't have to look at the PPI, the CPI, or the CPE. We know that there is inflation. We know that things are costing more across the board. We see it in commodity prices. We see it, of course, in stock prices. We see that there is a general growth of overall price growth, whether it comes to raw goods, finished goods, or anything that we're buying on a regular basis. Fuel costs are up, education costs are up, food costs are up. So this 1% increase on a month-over-month basis turned into be over a 4% year-over-year increase for PPI. Now that we knew was going to happen because we looked at the base effect. We talked about this here and on DH Unplugged, where the base effect, where we're comparing the current pricing to a year ago, when that year ago we saw a deflation spiral due to the global lockdown and the quarantines and the pandemic. So now we knew that was going to be in the system. But this month-over-month gain of 1%, which was expected to be about 0.2, 0.3%, depending on where you looked at, was a pretty big surprise. Now, I got to tell you, bonds did not react as much as I would have considered they would have. Bonds have been gaining, that is yields, have been gaining, prices down, over the last couple of months with the idea that we are going to see a rampant inflation. Here we are getting the first signs of a month over month that was significantly higher than was expected, and bonds did nothing. Markets reacted with a, oh, okay, ho-hum. Only 1% on month over month? What's the big deal? It's transitory. That's what was the narrative that has been drilled into the system and now, I think, sinking in with investors by the Fed. because they've made the commitment that no matter what we see, no matter how bad it gets from an inflation standpoint, they are going to hold tight with their overall goal of making sure that they're going to have the pedal to the metal until we reach full employment. The hell with the inflation numbers. Remember something a number of years ago, back in the financial crisis, the Fed said, hey, we are going to keep on continuing to allow for massive amounts of quantitative easing or bond purchases and a very low interest rate until we get to an employment rate that we believe is reasonable. And that's going to be about 6% or so at the time. Then they're going to start working on where we are. And you know what happened? You remember this once I jog your memory. Once we hit 6%, they said, we think we need to get to 5.5. Then it went to 5. Then it went to 4.5. And they weren't content because they were only concerned about building the wealth effect and the trickle-down economics that they were working on and saying, you know what, at the same time, hey, we do not see inflation. This time around is exactly opposite. They're going to do what they want to do. That's what they do. Until they do too much and break the system. They've done it time and time again. Every single time. We've seen the trough to the peak and the peak to the trough because the Fed has either pushed too hard or pushed too little. And they're doing it again now. Last time in the financial crisis, they said, you know what? They made the excuse that inflation is down. Therefore, we need to keep interest rates low, even though we're reaching past the levels of employment that we had as our target. This time, they're doing the reverse. They're saying, hey, you know what? Inflation is high. It's above. But you know what? Our employment number's not there. So they make up whatever they want to make up, when they want to make up, how they want to make up, and they just continue doing what they're doing. And in a way, we've all been trained to believe that, you know, during these financial catastrophes, wow, what a great opportunity here, because we know the Fed is full of crap. We know that these things actually make for really great investment opportunities to a point. And in fact, if you think about it, when the worst is over and things get better, it's not as good as a time to invest. When we see the economy running really hot or reaching full employment or getting to a point that we've leveled off and all the fears out, that oftentimes becomes a real problematic time because we realize that the normalization of rates and the normalization of the balance sheet by the Fed is going to be something that has to be unwound. This time, I have no idea how they're going to do that. The truth of the matter is that this time around, it is different. There's $7 trillion sitting on the balance sheets. That's absurd. They have an interest rate that they can't actually lower. In fact, if you thought about the idea of what happens if something, I don't know what, something bad happens. We get some more hedge fund blowups, or I don't know, maybe there's some kind of war. So I don't think of what could happen. What's the Fed going to do? They're going to go from $120 billion to what? $200 billion of bond purchases? They're going to start doing what? Yield curve controls? Go negative with interest rates? I think not. We know that just more of the same is not necessarily going to help because right now, really, we have a 1-2 punch that's going on that's really supercharging the environment. Number one is, of course, low rates and the quantitative easing, but number two is the fiscal stimulus. That's really what has been powering things ahead. The amount of money that's coming into the system by the very nature of direct payments, PPP programs, low-cost loans, grants, and infrastructure and other spending is outrageous. It's great. Happy days are here. No question about that. But how do we pay this back someday? And what is the end price of products vis-a-vis inflation? Where is that going to be? So think about how some of the issues that we had over time were, well, pretty good for markets, even though it was the worst of times for us personally. And the Fed has done a really great job, I got to tell you, no question, about making sure that we all know that they're going to be there as a backstop. We've seen this for the last 20 years or so, even further back. But really, in modern day, and when I say modern day, I'm talking about in the last 20 or so years. In modern day Fed era, with the Bernankes of the world and the Yellens, they believe their job is much different than their predecessors, who were really there to control pricing and to make sure that there was a stability in the markets. This new group, with Powell included, thinks that their job is all about the markets. And they will continue to push on all of this until a time that they go from the peak to the trough again, till they break the system, till there's too much margin and leverage like we just saw last week with the hedge fund that blew up, till we see that there's so much money in the system that everybody and their brother are opening up brokerage accounts and investing in the crappiest of crap stocks, thinking they're going to get rich quick, which is something we need to talk about. The idea of what's your goal in all of this? Why are you listening? What are you doing? Is it all about getting rich quick? No, probably not. Although it'd be nice. It's probably about something much bigger, which we're going to talk about. And some of the things that happened last week in terms of some of the stories that are out there, some of the things that people are sending me, some concerns they're having, some of the recent narratives and the studies, I guess you would call it, that are out there have frankly been kind of confusing to me. And I want to talk about this because they've been floating around. But first, I want to get to something that can help you relate it to your bond portfolio. And more specifically, that's Interactive Brokers Bond Challenge. I'm not sure if you know about this, but you could use the free Interactive Brokers Bond Search tool to search out their deep availability of U.S. government securities, 26,000 global corporate bonds, and over 1 million municipals. IBKR passes through the highest of all bids and lowest of all offers received at the electronic venues it accesses. And Interactive Brokers doesn't widen the spreads, which is really important. That's really important. They don't apply hidden fees or markup quotes at all. Plus, Interactive Brokers was just recognized as the best broker for bonds in 2021 by Benzinga. You got to ask yourself, how many basis points does your current broker keep when it comes to bonds? Which I got to tell you, sometimes those spreads are very significant. So I want you to go over and find out more. Go to ibkr.com/bonds and take that challenge. So let's dig in now to something else. Let's dig into some interesting stories towards the end of the week that, well, I got to tell you, I was terribly confused over. Because I track a lot of the discussions that are out there, the reasons why you want to invest and maybe reasons why you don't, and what's going on by this broker and this analyst and this institution is a good. And I got to tell you, you know, you're hearing things like, hey, I think there could be a correction, but then the markets will be higher by the end of the year. Byron Wien just this week. Or you hear things about, well, money on the sidelines. One of the things that really got me this week was the Bank of America Securities. They put out a report that said that money flows into equity funds were some of the highest they've ever seen. I thought we'd together read part of the story and commentary on this and kind of try to understand what the hell is going on. So at first they say, equity funds have attracted more than $500 billion in the past 5 months, exceeding inflows recorded over the past 12 years. That's a lot. Is according to data from Bank of America Securities. They say, which is likened the stampede to a melt-up in markets. Okay, so let's just take that first part and decompress that. Equity funds attracting massive amount of money, which we kind of know was the case, and blew apart any numbers they've seen in a long period of time. And that's the reason why we're seeing that the constant melt-up or the constant move into markets, when markets dip down, they're bought. When they're up, they go higher. Kind of there's no such thing as a flat day. Yeah, we've had days where markets do sell off pretty significantly, but the next day they're just back at it looking for bargains. Then they write in the same article, the flows also are raising fears of a pullback from record highs. Huh? And they say, well, because given valuations are at the highest since the dot-com bubble in the late 1990s, with the S&P 500 trading at nearly 22 times forward earnings. Oh, so here we go. We got an article that talks about that Bank of America says, on one hand, massive amount of money that has been flowing into equity funds. On the other hand, we're seeing that there's a concern that this is that's causing valuations to be at a ridiculous level. And, well, where do we go from here? Now, with all of this money going into equity funds, what's really interesting to note is that volumes are just blah. They've been coming down. In fact, diving at the end of the week, I think Friday of last week was the lowest volume traded day, non-holiday, of the whole year. And then we're hearing a lot of stories about all this money sitting on the sidelines. You confused? We have a lot of money sitting on the sidelines, massive inflows, concern about valuations, and volumes diving. What to make of all of this? Each one of those on their own are pretty convincing points for one fact pattern or another. But when you add them all up, it's like, what do I do with that? What do I do with all this information that has all these different contradictory components to it? And I think that it's really important right now, at this very moment, to talk about keeping your head clear, staying away from these kinds of, well, rationalizations, I best describe them as. Because it looks like there's this wave of information that's trying to prove theories. I guess they're building a wall of facts to try to prove a preconceived notion or try to prove something they want to be, versus looking at the data itself and then making an informed decision about all of it. Not to mention, let's all admit that there's an incredible amount of misinformation that's out there these days. In fact, I received an email this week. It reminds me. I received an email. I think the title was something like, I'm scared. I think that was the title. I'm scared. That was the subject of the email. Client was spooked. Why? Because he read an article about a flash crash in the bond market. So he sent me over the article. I read it. And you know what? It was bunk. Stupid. Even though the bond market we know had a great deal of volatility over the last several months, I don't think any of that can be characterized even remotely as a flash crash in prices. Yes, we moved from 1% up to 1.7% and bond yields are coming down. Bond yields went up and prices are coming down. And we did see a couple of days where there was a pretty good spike in rates. But no way was that a flash crash in prices. That would be a much more significant kind of move. So I think we all need to be really careful about what we read. We need to know the source. I think it's really probably just as important to understand who the author is and what they're up to, where they stand on one side of the equation or the trade in this matter, and where they are in the scheme of things. What do they have to gain from what they're talking about? Because sometimes the lines can be blurred pretty significantly when it comes to looking at the reporting And that fine line of propaganda, it can be very, very difficult to discern. So just be careful. Understand everything there is to understand about it, and maybe just kind of screen out some of the noise that's out there, because a lot of times we spend a good amount of our day looking at news and items and things, and we get that thing, oh, look at that, flash crash in bonds, is it real? Just let's get down to the bottom line of the facts. I want to talk about financial goals, and I want to help you maybe, hopefully, try to relieve you of some of that weight that's on your shoulders that maybe has been burdening you for some time. Because I think a lot of us have this idea about where we should be and where we are. And we compare ourselves to others and where they are. And maybe that's not the most healthy thing to do. We're going to get into that in a second. Let me talk about Masterworks. Masterworks. You know, there was a recent Bloomberg survey showing that the average price for NFTs, or these non-fungible tokens, have tumbled almost 70% from their peak in February. So it may just make sense to consider putting some of your money in real, tangible art by established blue chip artists these days. And that's where Masterworks.io comes in. Masterworks.io lets you invest in physical blue chip art by top artists like Monet, Basquiat, and Picasso via SEC qualified Reg A offerings. You don't have to worry about these artists ever minting new works, and supply for blue chip art is constantly declining as works move from private to public hands like museums and foundations. Over the past 25 years, contemporary art prices rose 13.6%, had lower loss rates than gold, and a 0.01 correlation factor to equities. So head on over to Masterworks.io today, and the Disciplined Investor podcast listeners can skip their 10,000-person waiting list by using promo code TDI. That's Masterworks.io. See important disclaimers and other information at masterworks.io/disclaimer. So we have goals. We have milestones. But I get this feeling that everyone's in a hurry. We all want to be rich now. We buy a stock and it needs to move up, 10, 20% today or in this week. Or if it doesn't, I'm going to feel like, hey, you know what? This thing isn't doing anything. Again, I have to believe it's a sign of the times. When we watch a SPAC move up 30% in a flash, or Bitcoin up 100% this year, right? I mean, these things are not necessarily normal. But we hear about these stories from our friends and how they've had this investment. They've done so great with this. Oh my gosh, it just keeps on going up. Or another one making big money on something. I mean, how does that make you feel? You feel left out? You feel like, oh, why can't that be me? Listen, I'm going to help you unburden yourself for a second here with all of this FOMO and all of the concerns and this idea that there's something wrong with me. I should be doing what they're doing. Listen, this is a process. Because sometimes those same stocks that vaulted 50% in a week that your friend is telling you about at a Saturday afternoon lunch that, oh man, I made all this money on the stock this week. I got to tell you, oftentimes they're down the same amount the next week. Or it's possible that they got in a much higher price and this stock dropped and it just started moving up. You know, you don't know what people are really saying or what they're doing. They're telling you about these great gains in investment, but they're not telling you about all those losers. I've told you time and time again, I call it the golf course or the putting green talk, where somebody's telling me about all their great winners and all that. And then you say, do you have any losers? Well, I don't know. I don't think so. Maybe. It's possible.
People only talk about their winners. They want to make themselves feel better about themselves and show you how great they are. Yeah, every once in a while, you'll run into somebody who only talks about the loser. Oh, I can't make any money in the stock market. All I do is lose all the time. Probably not true either. And when we look at the idea of financial goals and milestones, one of the things that a lot of us forget to do is put a time period on them. Because if I just say, hey, I want $2 million in the bank, that's my goal. It's not a complete goal. It's incomplete. So I want you to think about something here. Consider this. If you have a goal of walking 20 miles and you don't put a time period on it, what's the point? Is that in a day, in a week, in a month, in a year? I mean, how does that work? You've got to make sure that you put a time, then reach that level. You can change the goal at that point, because otherwise, where's the satisfaction? What's the point of making a goal if you could never reach it? What if I was to say that I'm going to give you a goal, that I want you to walk every day, and the goal is to reach the horizon? Well, you're never going to get there. The horizon is a moving target. And if you create goals for your finances that are moving targets that you never get there and you can't do a check, okay, I got that goal. I reached that level. I am hitting that milestone and move on to the next. You're going to be constantly dissatisfied, upset with yourself, and thinking that you're just not getting anywhere. There was a movie. Do you remember this movie back in the, I think it was the 90s. It's called What About Bob? It starred Richard Dreyfuss. And he played this doctor, psychologist. Bill Murray was his off-the-wall patient. And the theme of the movie was this book that he wrote, Richard Dreyfuss as the doctor. And he wrote this book, and it was called Baby Steps. Baby Steps. Okay, Baby Steps. Small goals on the way to bigger breakthroughs. And I think that was, there's a lot to be learned from that. The idea of we should start with smaller goals that are bite-sized that we could reach. And we could relate these to financial goals and milestones. Maybe a baby step would be something like maybe opening up an IRA and funding it with some affordable amount that you choose this year. Maybe you never had one before. I'm going to open up an IRA. I'm going to put $1,000 into it this year. Then maybe another baby step is to fund it to its maximum within 5 years. Whatever that maximum is for you and your tax bracket and your income level. I'm going to make sure that I keep on putting money away, but I'm going to be at the maximum within a 5-year period of time. And if you get there in 3 years, you're like, hey, look what I did. Move on to the next goal. Then we could set a goal of maybe diversifying the portfolio, investing in a certain way each and every year. Small, achievable goals that are tangible and intellectually honest. Financial security it's not just today and tomorrow. It's a lifelong process. Even though I've been doing this a long enough period of time, and even when I see people that have enough to retire right now, no matter what their age is, you know what? They have to stay retired. So it's an ongoing process, this whole idea of investing and reaching these goals and meeting these requirements, whatever they are. I have a tax goal of this. I have an estate planning goal of that. I'm going to do this right now with the idea that in 4 years, I'm going to be able to do this. I'm going to college plan. That's easier. Because we know the date range on that, when they go to college is when you need the money. I need to save for a house. But when? 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. The idea that you're not as rich as your neighbor shouldn't be on your mind. That's crap. Get over it. But at the same time, do something about getting to your specific levels of financial independence, which may be entirely different than your friends, your neighbors, or your family. Baby steps. Baby steps. One milestone at a time. So how do you start? I guess is the big question, right? What do I do? If you remember back in, let's think, that was back in, I guess it was maybe July, maybe June. We talked about this whole idea of, hey, 1 foot in, 1 foot out, particularly for those people that were too scared, frankly, to invest in the market back then. Slowly and surely moving toward your goals and the understanding that the horizon is not the goal. The goal isn't, hey, I want a stock and I want to have my portfolio up 250% per year. Now, maybe a trader can do that, but come on, for an investor, not likely. The fact is you can update and change your goals over time to meet the needs and desires you have, but you cannot change and compare and do things just because you're seeing somebody else doing something. You can't have their goals. Their family is different. Maybe their health is different. Their situation is different. The job's different. Your goals are your goals. Because it's kind of funny. I mean, if you think about what we do on an everyday basis when it comes to markets, all we hear about is, the Dow Jones was up, the NASDAQ was down, the S&P was up, this is going well, Bitcoin's doing that. And everybody seems to want to compare themselves against the S&P 500, for example. Kind of weird. It's weird when you, especially you get people saying, hey, tell me something. How are my investments doing compared to the S&P 500? Like, wait a second. Are you invested in the S&P 500 or something that is similar to that? Or what's the point of comparing to that particular index compared to what you're doing? Is that what you want to be? And if it is what you want to be, why aren't you just simply indexing, utilizing passive ETFs to invest in the S&P 500? Why screw around? When we compare an investment, a fund, or an ETF, for example, we look at it as compared to a benchmark or even the relative peers, for example. I mean, can you imagine if you would ask me how I scored on the golf course and I told you I got 3 touchdowns? What? How would you even deal with that? Or if you asked how a specific bond is doing in your portfolio, and then I compared it to small cap stocks or micro caps or foreign stocks. And you'd be like, okay, my bonds aren't doing as well or they're doing better than foreign stocks. I feel really good about that. Or could you imagine if you were trying to lose weight and your goal for your body size was 25 pounds, but you compare that to someone else who is maybe only 5 pounds over and how'd you do? I mean, these kinds of comparisons that we get ourselves into is just a total mind beep. You know what I'm talking about? It's a mind bender. Why are we doing this? We need relevant goals. We need baby steps to get there. At first, we need real targets. If we want to achieve those goals, we need to have some realization involved here and not try to just take on someone else's goals. What they're doing. I've run into a lot of clients that came to us because, you know why? They're with another advisor that utilized what the advisor thought was the right thing, but not really talking about it with regard to risk, time horizon, goals, milestones with the client, with the people. Like, hey, markets are good. Let's just put it all 100% in the markets right now. And not really looking at, well, can you tolerate that kind of risk? Is that something that is even possible? If we have relevant goals, if we have real targets for our achievement of those goals, That's great. Otherwise, what's going to happen is you're never going to be satisfied. You're probably never going to get to your specific level of financial independence. Probably going to short circuit yourself, shoot yourself in the foot. So come on. This is the time. I'm not saying invest in this or invest in that. I'm just telling you, let's invest in the right thing for you. If your portfolio is in shambles because you've been following these ARK funds, you're in the MOMO and this year is really a wreck, and you just think, well, I'll just hold on to it until it comes back. Really? That's the goal? You invested improperly for yourselves recently, you lost money, and you're just going to now, the goal is going to switch to, well, I'll hold on to it until it comes back. Now, maybe you believe in it and maybe you think it's going to really do well for you. That's great. No problem with that. If that fits your time horizon, if it fits your relevant goal, your milestone is insight, what you're going to do, it all lines up, then I am okay with it. But however, if you've not done any of that work to begin with at all, it doesn't have to be a very difficult process, just a little flush out of what this is all for, where you are from a risk level, which can change over time. That is part of the process. There's a lot of noise out there. You need to be aware of all of this and understand that while it's a game for some people, this may be your life's work. Maybe you're on a different playing field. Maybe you shouldn't compare to that versus this. Maybe you should do what's best for yourself. And maybe what's best for yourself is what you're doing, but maybe it's not. And I'm challenging you to take this moment. Take this moment and figure out how you can reach your milestones, your level of financial security, your level of financial independence. Maybe you need to work with somebody. Maybe you need to do it by yourself. Maybe you need to change who you're working for. I don't know. So wherever you are in the range of your life, it's not too late to stop and consider your future. Make a plan, stick to it, write it down, track it, adjust it when necessary for the right reasons, and be true to yourself and to your future, for your family's security, and for your sanity. And as Forrest Gump would say, that's all I have to say about that. Hey, thanks for joining me. Make it happen. Make it a great week. I will see you again. Join us on DH Unplugged Tuesday night, live at 9 o'clock, dhunplugged.com. Anything you need to know about us over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Make sure to follow me on Instagram, Dad Bod Food Blog. Of course, on Twitter, Andrew Horowitz, one word, nothing at the end, no numbers, no other letters. Very simple. Don't follow the imposters. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for being here every week. Leave a review on iTunes and everywhere else that you can find it. I'll see you again next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.